Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Lieutenant General Robert Gard, who's the chairman of the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and a former executive assistant to two Secretaries of Defense. He, along with Brigadier General John Johns, who's the former Director of Human Resource Development for the Army General Staff, he's taught at West Point and at the Naval Academy. Together, you have an article at CNN, General Gard, with General Johns about the Congress getting real about cutting Pentagon spending. Strikes one as a bit of a heresy. Normally, military men always want more. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, I think it's probably a fair generalization, but you've got to remember that our previous chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Mullen, said that our greatest security threat was our economic situation and budget deficit.
Well, is the sequestration then, even though it's a blunt instrument, is that the only way the defense budget's going to be cut?
I hope not. If we could get the Congress to start appropriating funds for defense programs based on security needs instead of the needs of their states and districts, we could save a lot of money right off the top.
Well, but that goes back to President Eisenhower's warning in his farewell address in 1960 about the military-industrial complex. In the original draft of the speech, he called it the military-industrial congressional complex and took that out in deference to the Congress. But that's been an eternal problem, hasn't it been, that the Congress pressures the Pentagon and you end up buying stuff that's, as you've written in your article in CNN, that we're going to be building new toys that are going to be kept in the garage.
Yes, that's right. Look at the F-22 fighter. It hasn't even been used in Afghanistan. It was a fighter designed to combat air-to-air the next generation Soviet fighter that's never been built.
And the F-35 is even worse in as much as they've tried to give it a multiple missions. And at my understanding, having spoken to two of the designers of the F-16 and the A-10, which are the successful American planes, the F-16 being the one that the F-35 is supposed to replace, it doesn't even do as well as the F-16 by all measures. And it's all to do with this stealth business. And apparently you can buy for about $10 million from Russia a radar that picks up all of these stealth planes.
Yeah, I think stealth's oversold myself, and as you suggest, it's quite costly. And if in fact stealth does give us some marginal advantage, all of the planes don't have to be stealth aircraft. You can just have a few for whatever mission you plan to use it on that would require stealth.
So given that this fiscal cliff argument, I mean, first of all, the very framing, the semantics of surrounding the fiscal cliff are somewhat hyperbolic at the very least. There is no real crisis, but it's one of those crises that have been generated that the press have gone along with. But it's really, as you point out in your article, more reflecting the lack of political will, not rational planning. Since when have we had rational planning in Washington?
Well, if you look for really objective rationality, probably never.
So what are you asking for then, General Gard?
Asking for a realization on the part of the members of our legislature that we are in fiscal trouble at the present time with the growing debt, and they need to address it in the best interests of the country, not the best interests of maintaining jobs in their states and districts.
And in terms of the cuts that you're talking about that need to be made, as opposed to the blunt cuts across the board that the sequestration would do, Is there anything that gives you hope that there are these rational discussions going on? Because, for example, if you cut the F-35 program out, it's going to cost $1.6 trillion over its lifetime. It alone, that one program, takes up 38% of the entire procurement budget. So that seems to me to be the ultimate in low-hanging fruit.
Well, certainly the F-35C could be cut, the naval version. This goes back to the McNamara era when they tried to produce an aircraft for all the services and it didn't work out. The F-18, E, and F served perfectly well. You can save over $16 billion over 10 years if you just cut the F-35C.
So who's listening to this argument? I mean, there's got to be a constituency out there that has powerful lobbying powers when they are able to push through these programs that don't work. I mean, there's nothing more ridiculous than the F-22, this latest fighter that we have, that it's been grounded more often than it's flown. It's never been used in Afghanistan, as you just pointed out. Its pilots are blacking out because the oxygen system doesn't work, and their pilots have been killed and planes have been lost as a result. And it cost a fortune. So we have the manifest evidence that these expensive programs are providing planes that don't fit the missions of the 21st century, cost a fortune, and don't work. And yet the power seems to be on the side of business as usual as opposed to a wake-up call here.
Yeah, that's what's so frustrating. I mean, even when everyone takes a bow toward the fact that we are in fiscal difficulty and we need to be more responsible, it's a kind of not-in-my-backyard syndrome. And then, of course, influential members on the Hill support each other's programs so that they can get some support to get the thing through. We're also acquiring weapons in large numbers before we ever finish testing them. The ground-based mid-course missile defense system, of course, is the poster child. When President Bush ordered its deployment in 2004. And so we have those interceptors in Fort Greely and Vandenberg Air Force Base, and we haven't had a successful test since 2008.
And these are supposed to stop North Korean missiles that don't yet exist.
And Iranian missiles.
That, yeah.
In the case of the F-35, we will not even begin operationally testing the aircraft until 2017. By then, we will have purchased more than 350 of them. We've had only developmental testing. The literal combat ship, we will have purchased 20 of 55 before we complete developmental testing.
Well, already that ship, the literal combat ship, costs a fortune. My understanding is that because it's bonding steel and aluminum, it's leaking because of electrolysis, and it also veers off course. So there are tremendous problems with that ship.
Well, that's the problem with buying before you find out if it works. We actually canceled some $50 billion worth of weapons before a single one was online in the previous decade. So this certainly is a place where one can find a substantial saving.
Again, I'm speaking with Lieutenant General Robert Gard, who's the chairman of the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the former executive assistant to two secretaries of defense. He, along with General John Johns, a former director of human resource development for the Army General Staff, who's taught at West Point and at the Naval Academy, have an article at CNN, Get Real and Cut Pentagon Spending. Let's turn to the other big low-hanging fruit here in terms of cutting the budget, and that is that the Pentagon is expected to spend more than $700 billion on nuclear weapons over the next 10 years. And the former head of the U.S. Strategic Command, General James Cartwright, has called for drastic cuts in nuclear weapons, saying that the stockpile is beyond our needs. What is it we're really trying to deter? Our current arsenal does not address the threats of the 21st century. The program is based more on ideology than security. So walk us through that, but that low-hanging fruit.
Well, what we have now is guidance to the Strategic Command that comes from the previous administration because the implementing instructions for the nuclear posture review under President Obama have not yet been issued. And you may recall a leak from the classified version of the nuclear posture review during the Bush 2 administration postulated the possibility of our initiating the use of nuclear weapons against as many as 5 countries should they be developing weapons of mass destruction. So here we have a directive to the operator to be prepared to preempt 5 countries with nuclear weapons. And a lot of the targeting guidance previously, which is still in effect, is to attack large numbers of targets in those countries against which we are programming our nuclear arsenal. Now, hopefully the president very soon will issue implementing instructions for the unclassified nuclear posture review that was issued during his first term. And that posture review said that it was highly likely that we could continue the deterrence mission with far lower numbers of nuclear weapons. Why, for example, do we need to build a whole new facility to produce plutonium pits for nuclear weapons when the Scientific Advisory Committee just came out with the conclusion that the plutonium pits would last for 150 years. So why spend, and Lord knows how much it'll end up costing, it was a few hundred million in the initial estimate, it's up over to $5 or $6 billion now. The administration has asked to postpone it for 5 years. Both the House and the Senate Defense Authorizations Committees put money in to start the study, and the design isn't finished yet, to go ahead and build that at Los Alamos. Now, we simply don't need that. There's low-hanging fruit for you.
Well, and I know it's I used to work at Los Alamos. I know that to some extent we're talking about kind of academic welfare here, because the idea that you need more plutonium pits when during the so-called peace dividend, so many weapons with the agreements that were made as the Soviet Union was, before the Soviet Union collapsed, plutonium lasts for 25,400 years. That's its half-life. So there's tons of plutonium pits already sitting in warehouses. I mean, my understanding is, if anything, there's a shortage of tritium. So what the hell are they doing? Why do they start building a new facility to make more plutonium pits? That's
well, it was the whole nuclear thing is kind of a ideological hobby horse on the part of certain influential members of Congress who, by the way, receive very large campaign contributions from the nuclear lobby of the companies that actually are producing the delivery vehicles and so forth. So it's all wrapped up again in that military-industrial congressional complex. You're absolutely right. As I understand it, the first draft did include the word Congress, but unfortunately it was taken out.
Apparently by Brother Milton, who I believe wrote it. But as I say, that was back in 1960, and here we are in 2012. Actually, we're at 12-12-12 today. It's, if you're superstitious, it's apparently a strange day today. So let's try and end on some kind of positive note here, General Garden. Not wring our hands about, you know, this sort of unstoppable juggernaut where, in the name of defending the country, we're bankrupting it. And I think, as you rightly point out, the real challenge here, when you cite Paul Kennedy's book, The Rise and Fall of Great Powers, is the extent to which the American Republic will survive the empire. I mean, that's the debate we should be having, surely.
Yes, I agree. And of course, Osama bin Laden, who wanted us to get involved in military conflicts in Arab states, had certainly succeeded. That is the source of a significant amount of the current deficit that we have, and we have to do something to arrest the growth of that. We're not going to be able to wipe it out by any means in the near term, but we certainly cannot allow it to go on at the pace it is currently. Hopefully, more sober heads will prevail. The president is taking a fairly strong position now that he's been reelected on some of these issues. In fact, Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, just stated yesterday that if certain provisions in the House Defense Authorization Bill end up in the final version, that he will strongly recommend a veto.
And that's the pork barrel from the Congress. Well, I hope you're right, General Guard, and I thank you for joining us here today.
Well, it's been my pleasure talking with you.
Again, I've been speaking with Lieutenant General Robert Gard, who's the chairman of the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and a former executive assistant to two secretaries of defense. He, along with Brigadier General John Johns, is a former director of human resource development for the Army General Staff, who's taught at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, the Air War College, at the Army War College, and the Naval Academy. Also co-wrote the article at CNN, Get Real and Cut Pentagon Spending. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me and I'll answer your questions. The conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. The headline written down in a minute.